Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Are you familiar with the game called hockey?
All I have to do is talk for a living.
If you say lube 10 times, you just feel better.
You say lube 10 times, you're going to feel better.
Why shouldn't I always be happy? I'm stealing money.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I went through life with this last name, okay? I'm a kindly old wizard. Close your eyes, hold your nose, swallow the medicine.
Debate hockey.
Swift Current Broncos. Let's Bridge Hurricanes. The Vancouver Giants.
God.
Pop culture.
I don't want to be culturally insensitive. I never am on this show. So we still may have Twinkies here in the States.
Still may have the ho-ho. Good news.
Might have the ding-dong.
And more hockey.
Jeff Merrick on the puck. Scooting up and down. Knocking the biscuit around.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Let's start the show proper, shall we?
The Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast is on site here in Nash, Vegas, where we have our good friend CJ Chris Johnston here filling in for the vegan. You're done, huh? You're done with these playoffs. You're just you don't want to do it no more.
Not, but it's not really a comment on the hockey. It's just more on the life of being on the road this long and getting old, man. Frankly,
you were starting in round one. Like I've been parachuting in here and there, but you're like a round one guy for this.
Yeah, I've covered basically every round. It's six games of Washington, Toronto. What was round two? Ottawa, New York for six games, and then seven games of Ottawa, Pittsburgh, and now we're three games into the final. So, you know, I've actually had worse springs where it's more seven games, but it's just been a long go. I have to say though, like legit, game three in Nashville was an energy booster just because it was so cool and so unlike stuff that I've seen that, you know, you go to a lot of hockey games, eventually they look the same. That one didn't look like anything else.
Yeah, we should say that we're doing this on Sunday. So game three in Nash Vegas was obviously last night, 5-1 win for the Predators. And the world gets a taste of Nashville Predators hockey and the fan environment. What was your favorite part about being around Bridgestone last night?
Honestly, it was the afternoon before the game.
Yeah, right? Because like, the assembly of the fans began probably like when we walked out of here from morning, like walked here for morning skate probably. Like I think it was like 11 o'clock or noon where I first started seeing people set up.
Certainly by 3 o'clock, which is when I started walking around for a 7 o'clock local puck drop, it was like raging already. And I walk out of the arena, take 20 steps to the left, and I walk by Kelly Olynyk, who plays for the Boston Celtics. Yeah. And then I make a right on Broadway, and I see the Ryan brothers, like within seconds. I mean, it kind of reinforces that it's a bit of an event.
Sexy Rexy hit the car with the sledgehammer, and one of the Dave Molinari from the Pittsburgh Post Gazette writes, "Let's get to see him finally beating something from Pittsburgh."
That's a great line.
That's a great line.
Yeah, so I mean, to me, I spent about 2 hours looking like an idiot because I'm wearing a suit for work reasons, not to anything else, walking around in 90-degree heat with humidity. I wanted to soak it in.
It felt like soak it in. You probably did, man, because it was fucking like 90 degrees yesterday. But like, it was a situation where like, it felt like being at a really big like music festival. Like everybody was just pressed up against each other in these small spaces and sweating on each other and fighting to get to the different places that, you know, the bars on Broadway and stuff. But at the same time, like everybody was super, it wasn't like a tension convention. There was like, everybody was really happy to be there and everybody was just in with the vibe. There was no bad vibes, I felt, walking around that place.
Not even remotely. It was oddly pure, frankly. Yeah. It was just happiness. A lot of kids, a lot of families down there, in addition to sort of like the bachelorette parties and the bros. Like, it was sort of like everybody intermixing perfectly. And, you know, I was trying to think of if any other city would have something like it. Like, because it's not just that it's
geography is one issue.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not just that it's a Stanley Cup final. They're down 2-0 in a series. So, like, in a lot of cities, even the one I live in, Toronto, with tons of great fans and a love of the Leafs, like, let's imagine a world where they make the cup and they lose the first two games on the road. I don't think the feeling and the atmosphere would match that.
If they were down 2-0.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, if it was the first game and everyone thought they were going to win, I think it would be.
Yeah.
It would be it wouldn't be the same. There's not even a space in Toronto to have that many people around the arena. But
well, they're unspoiled here. Like, I wrote about this today, like the idea that, you know, you look at a team like the Capitals, right? And last night the vibe here was it didn't matter what the deficit in the series was or even the deficit in the game. We're still going to give everything we possibly have as a crowd to these guys because we want to support them. Versus a place like Washington that's now on their seventh or eighth playoff collapse. And when you get into a game seven, as Brian McClellan said in his end of the season press conference, like, there's a palpable tension in that building.
They're tortured.
They're tortured. And here it was very, like you said, they're untouched. It's untouched snow here. It's pure. Like, even when things are going poorly, they're going to be all in supporting this team because they don't know any, but they don't know despair yet.
Maybe, but they've been in a league for 18 years.
No, it's true.
Like, it's not like they've had some pretty competitive teams, actually, if you look at their run. And
but competitive is different than expectations, though. Like, those right. Capitals teams are like, punch my ticket for a cup. And this Nashville team's always, even in Chicago in the first round, you had people picking Chicago to win the cup by virtue of the fact that they were playing the Predators in the first round and could get past them.
Right.
So I think it's one of those things.
Well, and it's funny, I just went back today and working on a Mike Fisher story and watched his press conference in September when he was named the captain.
Yeah.
And, you know, he made a pretty impassioned statement about why he thinks the Preds could win a cup this year. And I was thinking, when he said that, like, anyone from outside watching that would be like, yeah, everybody says that. But then it's just funny how full circle here we are, however many, 9 months later, and then he could be the guy that takes it from the commissioner in a matter of days.
What's impressed you most about this team that maybe you didn't realize being kind of you were on the Eastern Conference beat?
You always discover players that, like, I never even heard of Frederick Goudreau until he got in the Western Final, like,
right.
Which is probably not a good thing for me to be admitting as a hockey writer.
I will admit it too, man.
I didn't know about him. Yeah. I hadn't heard any buzz about him. No one had mentioned him. I didn't recall anything about his junior career. I mean, I've since learned he was like a walk-on everywhere, and he's been overlooked. So, there's a pattern in his past that probably leads to that. And then the guy can play.
Mm-hmm.
And, this Arvidsson, who, he had a 30-goal season. He's not a nobody. But to watch him play a little more closely, I mean, guys like that have jumped out at me. Maybe just that their forwards in general they're certainly way down on the star power listing compared to the Penguins, but that they really hold their own. And I think that their ability to sort of forecheck and cause issues for Pittsburgh's D has been a factor in the series.
Arvidsson's more like the guy, like a Jacob Silverberg, like a guy that you know is good and you're aware of what he's accomplished, but until you actually really see everything he does in a game, like that play last night, man, like his speed behind the net and creating the turnover and just kind of flinging it off the back and then Neil's there to score the goal, like you don't get a full appreciation of what he is beyond the numbers that you see on the stats page. And I think that's a good point on Arvidsson. I think the guy for me might be Ekholm. Like, I mean, the Subban-Ekholm pairing, I think, is there's been sort of this appreciation of how good it's been and shutting down Taves and you know, doing a number on, either Sid or Gino, whoever they're matched up against. But, like, Ekholm's really good. Like, I've been really impressed with him as sort of, they're both sort of stay-at-home guys in that pairing, but I've been really impressed with how he's played in the series so far.
Yeah, and Subban's really good, but I knew that because...
Well, it's funny, like, I'm right about Subban in the sense of, like, him being a shutdown defenseman, and it's funny because I found something that Pierre LeBrun wrote in 2012, and it was like, here's PK, and people thought he was going to be this way coming into the league, and now he's totally different, and he's actually a really good shutdown defenseman, and that was in 2012, and then something happened where, like, all of a sudden he's not seen that way for a good 4 years. Like, he wins the Norris, and then all of a sudden it's the flaw in his game is that he's too offensive. He doesn't play enough defense. I think Mike Babcock contributed to it by saying you have to play a 200-foot game to be on the Olympic team, and maybe Subban was on the cusp of not being on it at that point. But now I think there's been a rediscovery of how damn good that guy is defensively.
Well, it's no secret that Michel Therrien didn't fully trust him.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, a lot of the perception...
And that gets fed to the media, and the media then regurgitates it back on PK.
And it's its own vicious cycle, because then you look at the minutes, maybe he's not being used that way.
Yeah.
But PK, the one thing he can't control is when he goes on the ice. That's someone else's decision. And if someone values that side of his game and says, you can do this, and then gives him that opportunity and he does it, then we all go, he's good at it. But then if you're not getting those minutes and he's getting all the empty calorie minutes, like playing tons of power play and getting easier matchups at 5-on-5, then sometimes you look at it and go like, wait, you know, maybe that's all he is. So yeah. I think that there's an element of all that in there. The one thing we know is the large and loud analytics crowd has been on his side the whole time and saying that Therrien should have used him differently and that he's better than anyone ever realized. So
the other thing he's doing now, though, in this series, I mean, and, you know, we obviously have to touch on it at some point because it is, of course, the burning issue of the entire series, which is P.K. Subban's breath and then Sidney Crosby denying he said anything, but we'll get to that in a second. But he's kind of gotten this Pronger-esque thing now of we've all known he's a lightning rod, and we all know that he knows how to play the media and manipulate them, but in this series, man, coming out after game two and saying, we're going to win game three, and knowing what that means. He knows what weight that carries. It's not simply a guy saying, well, we're going to try hard in game three and come back home and give a good effort. That's a guy saying, we're going to win game three, and he knows we're going to do what we're going to do with that. And then
he spent two off days doubling and tripling down on it.
As his coach is saying, no, he didn't say that. He misunderstood him. But, like, you're right. And so then after game three, he, you know, Bruce Arthur asks him about the back and forth with Sid. I guess Pierre McGuire did the same thing on NBC. And he pulls this Listerine, bad breath, horse shit out of his pocket. And now we're all talking about that. And
I mean, it was a clear reference to the Kessel thing.
It was a Kessel thing, yeah. And then, like, literally, as Nick Kotsenika pointed out to him today in a scrum to PK, you know we have to go ask Sid that now. And now we're wasting Sid's time. And Sid obviously hates this more than anything, having to play these dumb reindeer games with PK Subban talking about something he never said. So it's a Pronger-esque genius right now of performance art that we're seeing. It reminds me of what Chris did in the series between the Flyers and the Blackhawks, where every day, even though he's probably having his worst playoff round in that entire run, every day he's coming out and giving us some nonsense to write about that's not the Flyers losing that series.
Wasn't he stealing pucks, too?
He was stealing pucks. Yeah,
I remember that.
He's coming out with, like, a hat on from some, like, private airline company and just sitting in front of us and just playing us like a fiddle, and I think Subban's doing a bit of that in the series. He's definitely been more of an agitator in this series than I think he's been in the previous rounds, to the point where he's getting into a fight with Malkin at the end of game two.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's embracing that role, and look, he's got all his Canadian media friends around too, so he's got literally a pack of French-speaking media covering him that I honestly believe wouldn't be here if Anaheim had won the West and PK wasn't part of this. I mean, PK's a legit beat in Quebec.
You're saying they're not here for Freddie Gaudreau?
Well, they're now discovering Freddie Gaudreau along with you and I. But
Freddie Gaudreau is now the guy they push out there for the French language media. Like, who is the guy in Tampa that they'd always put out for him?
Drouin might have been there.
Drouin, but who's the agitator that was on, like,
Cedric Paquette?
Paquette, yeah.
Yes.
There's, like, there'd be, like all the guys in the room, and all of a sudden it's, like, Cedric Paquette for over here, and then all the French language media will go there just to talk to this guy and get something in French for them.
It's no different in the Swedes or the Finns, though.
Yeah, that's
true.
You know,
because, I mean, this series, the Swedes are overflowing with legitimate options, and,
right.
You know, occasionally they're covering a series and it's like the 6D is the only you know, guy who speaks their language, and, you know, they're there to document it. I think it's pretty cool, actually.
The breath thing is so ridiculous, and I just have to hand it to PK, man. Like, what other guy in sports is just gonna, like, in a post game interview, that moment, be like, I'm just gonna lie about what the most famous hockey player in the world said to me after a game, just double down on it later in the scrum.
I mean,
it's insane.
It could be the sort of thing you'd see in the NBA.
Yeah.
I mean, there seems to be a lot of sort of more back and forth and stuff and playful kind of stuff. I mean, what's great about PK is he's doing it in this ultra-conservative sport that we have on this stage with all the national media and now having to have talking heads kind of try to talk about it, essentially, break it down. And, you know, he loves that stuff. Like, he was laughing at, you know, his guarantee about how much discussion that generated. And you're right, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's loving this. I guarantee he's loving this.
Mockery is great. That was another takeaway from the Predators game on Saturday was, I don't think people who haven't seen these games or haven't seen this team realize the level of mockery that occurs from this crowd to the players and the opposing team. It's very college sports. It's a town that isn't afraid to throw the word sucks around at a time when that word is being reevaluated in some places. It's pretty remarkable to see.
Well, and I love, so they do it for each of the starters, and then they announce Mike Sullivan, and he said, he sucks too.
Yeah.
And, like, you can see Sullivan, like, containing a laugh. Like, he's... I mean, how could you not find that amusing, really? I mean, who takes themselves that seriously? That
and like the chant that they do for the goalie, which I think is borrowed from college hockey, but like the "it's all your fault" thing.
Right.
It's like a 20-second long chant that everybody's on the same page for. They're all singing from the same hymnal. It's incredible to like be in the arena for that to happen. It's really cool.
I wish we had like a Nicole Kidman camera that's just fixed on her to see if she knows all the chants. You know, but which of these stars are really
Listen, obviously that depends on whether she's plugged her USB cable into her wrist and then plugged it into the computer and downloaded the chants into her Android body. Remember that time?
I'm not going to touch this. I don't know where you're taking me.
She clapped at the award show, and it looked like a robot that had just learned how to clap.
Right.
And occasionally they show her with Keith Urban, and she's trying to give high fives, and it looks like someone's struggling to not drown. I'm just saying, she's a wonderful actress. She's probably a very lovely lady.
I think she's a legit Preds fan, but I would love to know if, like, is Nicole Kidman there, like, yelling at Matt Murray after a goal? I mean, that would be amazing.
I'm glad you brought that up, because, like, it's a weird dynamic as far as bandwagonism. Like, I've seen some people talk about Predators fans and be like, oh, they just got on, you know, they're bandwagon fans. I'm like, but isn't this franchise at a point where we want that? like I don't think that anybody. I mean, I'm sure there's some Predators fans that have been here since the Steve Sullivan era or whatever.
And I saw a Cliff Ronning jersey last night.
Exactly. Like, there's a guy with a Chris Kratzoff jersey somewhere who's just like, you know, oh, I hate these newbies. But like, I feel like it's weird to criticize this place as a bandwagon fan spot. Just like I found it really weird this morning when everybody in the media is putting over Nashville as this great hockey town, a great hockey experience, and like Pittsburgh's taking it personally. They're like, you need to know we have viewing parties too. Like, we go to the bars beforehand too. I'm just like, yeah, we know that, but we're not trying to say you're not good. We're just saying that this is a different kind of good. Like,
it's a level of good that honestly I've never seen.
Yeah.
Like, that's not hyperbole. Like, I've combed my memory bank. I've never seen anything like this.
Honestly, the only comparison I can draw is the Vancouver Olympics.
Right.
Like an entire town.
That's the freaking Olympics, though.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the level of it. Entire town singularly focused on one team and its success or failure. They flood the streets. They're watching it on TV. They're partying around the arena. Although I don't know how many people were on, like, Hastings for the game in Vancouver at the methadone clinics. But it's like, it's that kind of vibe. And do you feel weird, though? Do you feel like because you're on site and because you're getting caught up in that maybe it affects the balance of your coverage at all? Like, I think we're all kind of cheerleading for Nashville to at least get a win in this series last night.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm more cheering. Like, it was like a civic celebration of much of the hockey game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was the one time where if Pittsburgh had a 1-5-0 last night, I'm still writing about Nashville. Yeah. Like the city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's so rare when you're at a cup final and something trumps a game that is going to decide who gets their friggin' name etched into that trophy.
Yeah.
And it's the bigger event. I mean, I think that's why we're all raving about it. It'll probably be back to normal by tomorrow, I would think, in game 4. And, you know, game 6, I don't know, I guess there'll still be crowd elements to it. But to me, it was a moment. And so I don't worry about that, the balance of coverage thing, because it was big. We've all said a lot about the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you know, I can say honestly, hand on a Bible or whatever you want me to do, that I really don't care who wins the series.
I found that to be one of the oddest feelings entering this thing. Like, clearly in the previous round, I'm rooting for the Penguins to beat the Senators. I don't want to cover the Senators in the final. I don't want the Senators on American television. I want the Penguins there because it's going to be better for the sport and better for me as a writer, probably, because they're much more interesting.
And the travel's better.
Yeah. Anaheim, Nashville, I'm probably rooting for Nashville in that series. I'd like to see what we just saw last night. I had a feeling we would see it. But entering a Pittsburgh-Nashville series, I'm like, it's a win-win. Like, either you get to write back-to-back champs for the first time since the Red Wings, or you get to write the christening of the new Honky Tonk Kings of Hockey and the team of the South, and they get their first cup in franchise history. Like, either way, you get a really amazing story out of it.
There's no, the only poor outcome would have been is if it was a sweep either way or something like
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really feel like the shame of a sweep is, you know, it just
when the Panthers made the Cup final in the 90s. It's like, congratulate. Oh, man, what an amazing moment that franchise. And then they just get their asses handed to them in very short order.
And you want a little tension. I mean, unless you have a rooting interest for one team, you just want over and you're a nervous wreck right now, which there's probably some fans out there. I mean, on both sides. Although we haven't seen him in Nashville. Like, no one seems nervous about anything here.
What do you think's going on with Phil? He's had a really rough series, and there were times Sullivan was talking today about Phil talking to Rick Tocchet and trying to maybe figure out some things, but like he's not been good, and he had his ice time reduced in the first period of Game 3.
I do wonder if he's hurt. I mean, because you have to. Yeah,
you see a production drop like that, yeah.
Well, and when you get to this stage of the playoffs and you want to go in on any individual player, like you go rip a guy and then this thing ends and it's like he's playing with two fractured ankles and a separated shoulder. I mean, like seriously, it legit happens. Like,
yeah.
Patrice Bergeron nearly died after playing a game in the Cup Final a few years ago for Boston with his lung collapsing. I mean, we kind of take it for granted, those of us that are around us all the time, but when you see Nick Bonino walk into the arena today on crutches and a walking boot and then skate, and because he's doing anything humanly possible to be able to play, so that's where that's sort of like a huge asterisk to anything I say next. But Phil looks frustrated. Yeah. So, you know, I wonder if the frustration we can deduce is really two things. It's that maybe he's limited by something that he's not capable of being himself, or maybe it's in his head a little bit. I mean, who knows? You know, something that they're doing is getting him down. I noticed it in the Ottawa series, to be honest. And he did score in that series. But his body language really looked... He just looks a little frustrated. He's getting into it with Malkin and all that stuff. You know what I mean? He doesn't look right, that's for sure.
That's why the most unsung heroes of this run might be the Penguins' defense. Like, all those guys are playing more minutes than they usually do because Letang's not there. They're all taking an absolute beating. A guy like Ian Cole looks like half the time he's about to collapse. Right. He's so freaking tired. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, we tend to view these guys based on the ice time, the numbers, see it as sort of a video game half the time. Don't realize that to make it this far, the amount of punishment that your body has to go through is unconscionable.
It's insane. Like, even the mental beating. I mean, you open this up by asking me about how I'm feeling. Like, like, I feel a bit tired after going through this grind, and I'm not doing anything remotely physical, and the stakes for me, you know, I guess I get to keep my job. But, you know, these guys, some of...
Well, they get to get their job, too, if they perform.
If you're Mike Fisher and you're 36 and you lost the Cup 10 years ago when you were young and now you're old, and, like, this is, like, everything. Like, the outcome of the next couple games for him will, like, define his career in some ways, like, in his own mind. I mean, maybe not in ours so much, but... It's a crazy grind, and when you talk about their defense, what stood out to me, I haven't looked at the updated numbers after Game 3, but heading into Game 3, their top six were averaging between like 18, 30, and 21 minutes. Like, they're literally the most democratic defense in NHL history, and I think it largely because they don't really have a true 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, they're doing whatever they can to patch this thing together, get through it. You know, definitely some ice bags around those guys. I think the guys that are playing are injured. We know about, you know, a couple of ones that aren't able to play for them. If they win a cup with this blue line, it will be...
It's the worst blue line that we've ever seen win a cup.
I think even worse than Carolina 06.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is the bar in recent times. I mean, I can't speak to the 80s, but like...
If they win this, and they still could. I mean, like, listen, after I saw them win Game 7 in Washington, it occurs to me that they can do anything. Like they have this incredible poise. Like, last night's not going to rattle them. They're not rattleable. You know, and maybe it takes them to figure out a thing or two on the power play. I don't know, but like, if they win this, to me the legacy is Sid's. I am in constant awe of how good that guy is, and I'm in constant awe of how many guys will tell you. And we all overrate the captaincy as writers, right? Like, yo, he wears the C. He's a leader. Sid's a leader, man. Like, Sid is... If you talk about the poise and comportment of this team, it's all a trickle-down from him. It's all a trickle-down from the effort he gives and from the fact that when he has a bunch of idiots like me and you standing around his stall seeing, like, did you say something about his breath? He just kind of just brushes it off and says, let's business. Come on.
Well, he's like a supernova now. Like, he's reached a point where no one's really questioning his standing in the sport or, like, his legacy is safe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, now it's just about getting it done.
Now we're in Mario territory. Like, now this is his cup if he wins it.
Right.
You can give it to Murray and say Fleury contributed. But, I mean, to me, it's like you go back-to-back. I mean, and there's a chance that if everybody doesn't bite on the Gensel narrative, then he could win back-to-back cons, too.
He could. I have a vote. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Holy shit, yet. You have a vote, eh?
Yeah. What I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that.
What are you going to do?
Just between us,
Chris.
Merrick V. Wyszynski listeners. I'm one of 15 people to vote.
You know where I stand on Gensel. I think you cannot take a round like the Ottawa round out of the equation. And in the Ottawa round, he was a ghost.
Yep. He was.
But that said, I mean, there is something to be said for closing the deal, as he's done.
Well, and Malkin has been so good in the playoffs, too. He's not coming off a particularly good outing as we're talking right now, but when you're viewing the 8 weeks of what he's been at,
yeah,
like, he was a monster in some of those big games in the Ottawa series. Like, it was like the scary Malkin where you're like, this guy can literally do whatever he wants.
It's incredible.
Right, like, it's like he gets superpowers for a certain portion mm-hmm. of the game. And like, he's frightening. Like, it's funny. He's the one name, every once in a while, if there's a defenseman I know, and it's not even for the purpose of a story, I'll just say, like, who scares you the most? Like, I hear his name more than anybody else in the league.
Yeah.
It might get to McDavid soon, but it's because he has the skill, but he's so big.
He skates so well. Maybe
he's kind of, he can be nasty.
Do you think the comparison is Lindros? He might be faster than Lindros was. But it's the same kind of thing. Like, how do you deal with that size? How do you deal with those hands? How do you deal with that like you said, undercurrent of nastiness?
The difference with Lindros is he was trying to truck you all the time. Like
yeah.
Malkin doesn't look for the hits to the degree Eric used to.
No.
I mean, the sport's different, too. Maybe Eric in this era would be playing in a different way, using, you know, a little like he used to just try to run through defense.
Yeah, which is the way he played in junior and thought he could do that to everybody in the NHL.
It's the way I played like NHL 94
and then he ran into Scott Stephens
right.
again and again. But no, you're right. I mean, like seeing him skate sometimes, and you're right. Like there'll be times in the game early on when you see Gino take a shift, and you're just like, uh-oh. Like, it's beast mode tonight.
Like, I know it doesn't matter and it's months later, but I could not believe he was not on that 100 greatest players list.
He was on our list in our book. Me and Dan Goes Brown and Loza, so we put him on.
Well,
just because because the NHL didn't rate the current guys at the right. And I think it's because of this. You have so many old school guys in the league, brain trust, Coley and Murphy and those guys, right? That they don't want to be the ones to say that another era wasn't as good as the current one. But I'm a younger guy who was never in the NHL, and I can say honestly that if you are doing what Alex Ovechkin or Evgeny Malkin or Eric Karlsson or Sidney Crosby are doing now, then you are doing it at the apex of what this game has been. The toughest defense, the toughest goaltending, the best coaching, the most travel, the most teams.
The only thing that you can hold against him is that he's been playing beside the only player who's better than him in this generation.
That's true.
Like, it's like the only thing, because then there's always that question of, well, is it because of Sid? And you know, the one thing I think, first of all, works in his favor is he's always been great when Crosby's been injured. And unfortunately, we've had a lot of opportunity in the last 10 years to see that.
Yeah.
They've almost never played on a line together.
And they've almost never played really well at the same time. You're right. It's weird.
I mean, so they're not fueling each other's statistics in like a crazy way. I mean,
right.
There's an element of it. They're on the same power play.
Right.
Although it seems like the narrative around Pittsburgh is the power play never works. So maybe I'd have to look and run the numbers, but maybe that hasn't helped them much.
But your point's taken. Like when we were legislating the Sid Ovi wars, and people were like, "Why can't Ovechkin do X, Y, Z in the playoffs?"
I did that a lot. I hate to admit,
but everybody did.
I was young.
Yeah, but everybody did because they came up like Magic and Bird in the same year, and I don't think anybody should feel guilty about it. I think you should feel guilty about it if you're still doing it in 2017 because one is demonstrably better than the other. But that said, like when people,
but
be
I've
like,
made the mental choice. I'm not going to do like Matthews, McDavid, or I mean, I've touched on it.
Well,
but I'm not trying to hit them.
It's unfair to Eichel,
right? Or whoever. You know what I mean? I just mean Line A versus Matthews. Whoever you want to draw the two around.
I think you can go center versus center. I think part of the issue with Sid and Ovi was that one was a winger,
right.
Completely different position. But like the thing about it, though, I was going to say is that like when people would criticize Ovechkin for his output in the playoffs, I'm like, okay, what if they had Malkin on the second line? How does that change things?
Right.
Because it would.
Well, like, first of all, if he has a small drought,
yeah.
Maybe having Malkin on the second line allows him to get out of that drought because they can play longer.
Of course.
Like maybe Malkin wins you a few games.
Yeah. You don't feel the weight of the world on you anymore. There's
right.
another guy. Like, that's the thing about Sid. Like, there's another guy. where if he's seeing the top D pairing, and let's say it's, you know, Josi and Ellis, and they're shutting down Sid, he can look down the bench and say, okay, there's another guy. It right. may not necessarily have to be me scoring a hat trick in this game because there's someone else. And to have that is incredible.
And then there's a third guy, Kessel.
Right.
Who's not putting him in the same category as those two, but he can score a goal out of nowhere in a way that very few players in the NHL can.
Right.
So, I mean, that's why they won a cup last year. They had three awesome scoring lines.
Yeah.
And no team could match up against that over a period
that's
of time.
That's why I look at a guy like Tavares and I'm just like, God go with you, man. To be able to do what you do with the rest of that behind you, where nobody's playing the Islanders and is worried for a millisecond about what's on the second line, and to put up those numbers is incredible.
Johnny T, solid guy.
I mean, he'll be the other guy when he plays behind Matthews, but...
I'm not indulging in that.
This isn't Leafs lunch, you don't have to.
No, I know, but I actually think that John Tavares is so unfailingly loyal. You know, he's all the hockey cliches, he's that. Like, his level of character is, you know, with his family and everything.
Yeah.
I don't think it's in his soul to leave. He feels that they chose him and he's got to deliver them back. I'd be stunned if he left.
I would be stunned too, but let me bring up this last point about the Leafs and then we'll end this because we both really want to get to Broadway. Or at least I do.
I'm actually not going tonight.
I didn't go last night. I wrote that piece about Nashville that last night and this morning, and I didn't go out.
I haven't gone the last two nights. I'm trying to put together a three-game winning streak.
A little hat trick.
It's all about preservation.
For those who don't know, like that is the other facet of this thing that is incredible. Like, the nightlife here... Broadway, for those who don't know the geography, Broadway is the main drag. It's like a mini Las Vegas. Every bar is a honky-tonk. They're all packed. It's all bachelorette parties and drunk bros and music and amazingness.
It would be hard to go there and not fall down into a black hole.
It is a block away from the arena. It's a block away. Think of like a three-block Las Vegas. It's a block away from an arena. And that's what you have here. It's incredible.
Thank goodness they built that arena near the Strip in Vegas, because
I've had great beers. I've heard great music. We almost got into a fight on the roof deck of Tootsie's.
You did?
Me and a few other folks I was with. I'm not gonna name any names.
What was the circumstance?
What was the circumstance? The circumstance was one of the people that we were hanging out with, one of the weird hangers-on that had come to our table because we had a nice prime location on the roof deck of Tootsie's was buying us buckets of beer to then kind of like glom onto our location. And at one point, he offered a beer to one of my friends. My friend didn't want it. And he said, hey, what are you, a pansy or something? And thus began the almost fight.
Wow.
Yes. That was like, you know, this is like 2:30 in the morning, right? So it's like...
Yeah, good decisions aren't being made
good decisions,
by anybody.
No good decisions ever made. Thank you, Tiger Woods. But it's that kind of vibe.
I saw Ryan Johansson on the rooftop of Tootsie's with his crutch. Like, he crutched all the way up there. There's, I don't know how many stairs, 30 stairs to get up there. And just, like, having a beer. And I don't blame him. I mean, I chatted with him a little bit. He's just, like, what do? You're just watching this thing.
Yeah. I know, right? And that's the other thing, too, about being here. And it was the same thing at the All-Star game. Like, if you want to see your favorite hockey personalities in various states of mental acumen, go down Broadway around 2 in the morning.
This is the city, I'll say this, because I've traveled a fair bit during regular season with teams, so it's not a big event like the one we're at. And this is the city where you're most likely, when you're on the road with the team, to see either players and or management and coaching staffs like having a beer. And where, in my experience, it's the place I'm most likely to have a beer with someone like that, because it's really very rare.
It's chill.
And it's, like, everyone just knows. Like, you're here, and it's like, everything's off the record, so to speak. And it's just, it's a place where people relax. The other one, weirdly, is Tampa, is a place in my years.
I've been in more than a few couple bars where all of a sudden John Cooper shows up, and you're just like, hey, coach.
Yeah. I mean, it's neat to have that environment. I mean, I must say, I'm guilty of occasionally wishing this job was used to be, and where, you know, just like where that level of access and where there's a bit more trust, maybe. And I get why it's changed. The world changes. But and sometimes you come to a place like this and it's kind of like a throwback sort of time.
I get mad about people that have, not necessarily people, but innovations that have ruined it. Like, you know, obviously social media ruins it. And then obviously, like, you know, a TMZ ruins it. Like, these guys, it's not so much what me and you do necessarily, but it's like everything else that's around these guys noise-wise makes them have to be in that little private area in real sports behind the ropes.
Right.
They can't be around the people in real sports. They have to be in the little the private area. Like, and it sucks. But
Maybe I've ruined it, though, too. I just mentioned Ryan Johansson was at the bar. You know what I mean?
I'm not doing it.
I was not presenting that in a negative light at all. I'm saying this is how cool it is.
Like, Chris Johnson is the TMZ of sports.
You know, but I'm really just saying, like, how cool is Nashville that a guy who plays on the team is, like, drinking where all the tourists would drink, and mixing with people and being totally cool. And he's not, he's like 6'3 and on crutches, so he stands out in that setting.
Yeah.
So I was actually just saying, like, good on you, Ryan Johansson, but maybe I'm making his life worse in an unintentional way.
All right, let's end on this, because this is the thing I want to ask you. There's been some speculation that the Leafs might be in the business of trying to find a defenseman RFA. Do you think that we're going to see a high-profile RFA signing this offseason?
With an offer sheet?
Yeah.
No.
I don't think so either. I think I always think it's pie in the sky, because at the end of the day, all these guys are in the old boys network of, I'm not going to touch your guy because I know you could come after my guy at some point.
Well, and especially a team like the Leafs, who are bracing for 2 years from now being in probably cap jail for the next decade.
Right.
You know, once they're paying their stars. I mean, it's the position Pittsburgh's operate under Chicago, but they're going to be somewhere down the road. They're going to be likely to have that issue,
because they're going to be in Austin Willie and Marner all come up at the same time kind of territory,
right? 1 year apart for Williams. Nylander's up first, and then Marner Matthews.
Oh, good. So okay, so it's more like a Tampa situation where you
right.
take care of one guy first, and then worry about the other two the next year.
And it's like you're just going to be taking hits, and you know they're very proactive with their cap. They're like they've planned it out. You know, some teams don't have to worry about it as much, I think.
Right.
But they're definitely going to be vulnerable to that themselves in like 3 years.
Do you think the best thing that happened to them was not getting Stamkos? How
well,
down the road
were they?
Well,
the best thing that happened to them was winning the lottery. The second thing might have been, I think for everybody, I think Stamkos is probably better for not being there in some ways.
Right.
Because if he was getting paid what they were probably going to have to pay him, and maybe
his health is wonky.
You know, it could be an uncomfortable situation for him.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, they got Stamkos, and he didn't get injured this year, so we're deep into hypotheticals. I mean, they could be here. Like, who knows?
No, you put him on – I mean, I don't like him on the wing necessarily, but I like him on Matthew's wing.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I would like you on Matthew's wing at this point, at least for the second assist or whatever. But
and Matthew's is like, look, fatty, just stand there and let me shoot the pucks off you, okay?
But, I mean, like, I probably long-term it's the best thing, but short-term, like, their cup window might have – potentially been open with a guy like that this year.
Yeah.
Having one more beast, I mean, they weren't that far off beating Washington.
No, they weren't.
They lost three games in overtime in that series. You know, I'm not saying they should have beat them, but
And that's not the Caps playing down. That's them being a really tough out. Really tough out.
Right. And so, you know, if they have Stamkos, they'd probably finish higher. So they're not playing Washington in round one.
Yeah.
I mean, look, this sport is like a coin flip nowadays. It really is. Like, who had this final? Like, I'm sure one guy out there, but this was not the popular pick by any stretch. And now that you're here and you're watching the games, like, I'm thinking Nashville looks like they could win this thing.
How do we miss that, right?
But just straight up, like, watching it, and they're missing their number one center.
Yeah. I know
Pitt's missing number one D. Everyone's got something to cry about at this time of year. You play this long. But, like, this is a really, really good team. And I shouldn't say no way, but they were not a popular pick to be at this
junction. I think people picked him before the season, but picked him only because PK was there and they wanted to be like a big F you to Montreal. And that's why they would pick Nashville to come out of the West.
Oh, man. I haven't checked in with anyone from Montreal lately.
That
works for the team, but I cannot imagine that. Look, the decision's made, but just the stuff they didn't like about him at the time they traded him is on overdrive right now. Just, you know, some of this coverage about the off-the-ice stuff that we're talking about.
And it's not even like he's a passenger here. Like, he's a reason that they're here, too. Like, a difference maker. And again, like I've said on the show before, the worst thing that could happen was for this to happen in the short term, because the justification of the trade was the short term for Montreal.
Right. But, I mean, it's still a team sport. Like, I think the Habs lost the deal, but I thought that the day of the deal, in large part because he's 3.5 years younger.
Yeah.
And I know he gets paid a lot and all this. We can break it down a lot of ways, but it's like I sort of felt like they were getting more of his prime years, and I like that aspect of the trade. But I don't think that the Stanley Cup proves one way or another that thesis, if that makes sense.
I think I want to make a t-shirt at some point that reads simply, stop relitigating the Subban trade.
Right.
Because, like, at some point we're going to be, I mean, maybe it'll be after this final, right? But we'll just be exhausted by it.
But look at, like, look who Shea Weber is playing with in Montreal. Like, he does not have the Ekholm Ellis.
He does not have the Ekholm.
Josie.
He doesn't have a suitor. He doesn't have anybody. He doesn't have anybody of the quality that he was playing with here.
Right. So, I don't know how we can look at Montreal's output this season. In fact, they lost the first round, and say that PK, that this deal is won because of this team success. You know what I mean?
And by the way, last thing, because I know you got a boogie. One of my favorite things to think about during this final has been the fact that so Pekka Rene is playing for a cup. He didn't play all that well in the first two games. We played okay in the third game, but he's the reason they're here, basically, because of how he played in the previous rounds. He signs that huge contract a few years back as a way to keep Suter and Weber, as a lure to them, as to say, look, we are committed to winning. We're going to give this goalie all this money. You guys should stay. Be in this too. Suter leaves for more money. Weber signs the offer sheet. That basically hastens his departure as well. Rene is the only guy of the Trinity that's still here, and he's the only guy who's played for a cup. That's the most beautiful hockey thing when it comes to the way these things work out. He committed to the team. He was the only one who committed to the team, and this team played for a cup before Minnesota or Montreal or Philly.
It is so hard to chase a cup.
It is.
Like Jerome McGinley's last 5 years or whatever since leaving Calgary is a testament to that. I mean, especially when he got traded to Pittsburgh. He legitimately was calling his shot at that point. He was a very effective player still, and he chose Pittsburgh over Boston, and then Boston beats Pittsburgh.
Right.
Like, you know, Marian Hossa with Detroit and Pittsburgh. He gets traded to Pittsburgh, loses to Detroit in the final, signs a one-year deal with Detroit, takes a huge risk. He blows out his knee. At that time, he passed up like a 10-year deal, $70 million from Edmonton. And so he did it to win the cup. He goes to Detroit, and then they lose to Pittsburgh. I mean...
The only guy who successfully chased the cup is a guy who said, I want to play on a team with Joe Sakic, Peter Forsberg, and Patrick Waugh.
Ray Bourque.
That's what it takes to successfully chase a cup.
And, you know, look, there's a few safe bets now. Like, if you're in that position and you want to go play with McDavid or maybe Matthews in Toronto and the guys that got there, like, that's a fairly safe bet that those teams are going to have success, but certainly no guarantee they even reach a cup, let alone win one.
Maybe the last guy to do it was actually, and all joking aside, was probably Brad Richards.
Right.
I'm going to take $1 million to play with this team and win a cup because I have all this other money coming to me from the buyout. Right. That's probably the last guy that did it.
Right. But I think the reason you don't see as much player movement is because the hockey players know this.
Yeah.
They know that I could, like, uproot my family, move to this great team, and then next year watch the team I just left win. Like,
yeah, of course.
That's, you know, it's not like the NBA where there's, if you're Kevin Durant, like, it makes sense. You go to Golden State, you're going to be playing the finals.
Yeah.
So.
Chase a ring, not the cup. It's different.
Yeah, and then the team owner gets that trophy.
No more.
I'm just kidding.
CJ, where can people find your genius?
I'm at Reporter Chris. I'm on NHL Network now in the States and doing lots of work at Sportsnet as well.
Awesome. Thank you, CJ. And everybody, will talk to you down the line. By the way, are you at this Puck Talks coming up?
Yes.
End of the month?
End of June.
Puck Talks. I got to find the actual date for this. Thank you, CJ. I'm releasing him from his duties here because he's got to go to TV or some such because he's famous. I'm going to come to Toronto for Puck Talks, and I'm going to come for two nights. As many of you know, the other podcast that I do also has the live show. That one sold out very quickly, and thank you all for that. We'll see you there on Monday of that week. But I'm going to Toronto for two Puck Talks at the end of the month. I'm vamping to find it. It's called the Puck Talks Festival. It's at the Rivoli, 28th and 29th of June. It's going to be me and Zeiss and CJ and Myrtle and Dello and all your favorites there. Dangle's going to be there. All your favorites are going to be there. Two nights of it, the 28th and the 29th. So go to homestandsports.com to grab your tickets for that event, because that'll be super fun, and it'll be a really fun way to blow out the year. We'll hopefully get up there and do some game show stuff and what have you. Still trying to figure out if I can get Merrick there. I don't quite know yet if it's going to happen, but anyways, go to Homestand Sports and check out that, and thanks for listening. It is great to be in Nashville, and great to be covering the Cup Final, and great to be writing about hockey, and thank you so much for supporting all of it. You can find my stuff on Puck Daddy, and also on Twitter at Wyshynski, as you know, and do check out the story I wrote about the scene at Game 3 if you haven't seen it, capturing what happened outside the arena and inside the arena, and all of it. It's a lot of fun. And oh, and thanks to everybody who listened to the show, came out to our meetup here in Nashville as well at Tailgate. Had a good group of like 40 people there. Great food and great booze. And Eric Young showed up, and also a guy dressed like a catfish, which is always a good time. Anyways, hope to do this with our my podcast husband Merrick next time we do it. But we'll catch you on the next time we do one of these podcasts. Thanks, everybody.